This is Lila Glasso-Francis from the Carolyn Glasso Bailey Foundation, sharing with you today a podcast with artists Deborah Salt and Brian Wills as they present their solo works in a combined show at the Porch Gallery, Ojai, April 6th through May 14th, entitled Front Side. Salt and Wills straddle the fine line of minimalism paired with a complex visual palette. At first glance, the works appear duochromatic, constructed of blocks of color devoid of shading. As the viewer moves around the pieces, the colors glow and intensify with each new step and angle. Salt applies thick pigment to the sides of her works, leaving the front of the canvases stark white or black. The room's ambient light ignites the color, causing it to radiate out from the piece, making the traditionally passive walls conspirators in the artwork. The paintings are installed or tipped on their sides, giving them added movement and breaking the customary static horizontal and vertical fields. On the other hand, Will's wall sculptures, constructed of rayon thread, wrapped around wood boxes, are hung in concise grids. When viewed head-on, the thin strands of thread wrapped around the structure with obsessive craftsmanship devour light and flatly expose the architecture of the box. When viewed from the side, the slits disappear, causing the colors to pop and magnify to extreme density. The box that once seemed empty and bare magically appears to be filled with a neon light. Born in Los Angeles, Deborah Salt grew up in New York City, where she studied at the Art Students League and the School of Visual Arts. Salt moved to Los Angeles in 2003, where she continues to live and work today. She has exhibited since the mid-70s in New York, Los Angeles, and internationally. Brian Wills, a native of Kentucky, holds both a GD and an SSP from Harvard University. He also holds a BA from Denison University. Wills has exhibited both nationally and internationally. Most recently, he was listed by Artsy.net as one of the 20 best booths at the 2017 Armory Show. Please sit back and join us in conversation with Porch co-director Heather Stobo and artists Deborah Salt and Brian Wills as they talk about their new show, their work, their admiration of one another in our Carolyn Glasso Bailey Foundation space. Thank you so much for joining us today.
So now I'm going to start with the questions. So to me, you both represent a continued arm of the California and light and space movement. How much and in what ways were you influenced by the original group of artists? Deb, I'll start with you.
Well, very much so. Now, more in the beginning, I was more interested in, I started all this level of work being interested in proportion and just how relationships of forms and the canvas work with each other. And that kind of grew into working, you know, kind of evolving, which we'll probably talk about later, evolving into working on the sides. And what I discovered by painting on the sides, I did not paint on the sides thinking that it was going to cast, that light was going to cast a halo of light and color off it. That was just more of an idea of form and proportion. But when the light hit the sides of the canvas that I put color around, which was usually red or black, I never used color in the beginning. I mean, other than red and black and white.
On the sides or on the front?
On the sides.
Okay.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, in the very beginning. And I didn't build up either. I just kind of surrounded them with black or surrounded them with red. And then they were just these big, giant forms of rectangles sitting on their corner on the floor going up the wall. So they were kind of sometimes heavy, sometimes weighty, sometimes, but I surrounded them with red or black. And then later on I started using colors, and I moved into a studio that had a lot of light. And before that I was in a studio with no light, with no windows. But then the light hit the sides of the canvases, and suddenly the walls were becoming color. And so I was just
like just an epiphany once.
It was a total epiphany. It was like, oh my God, these are becoming.
Awesome.
So, and I always put white on the front, so it wasn't that I was inspired by white or light or, I mean, I guess I was, but you know, I mean, light is everything, right?
Right.
But so that's kind of how it began. And then I was like, oh, this is light and space. You know, then people began to say this is kind of light and space. And also I was very, I'm friends with Mary Corse, who had a great influence, not influence, but a more of a an inspiration for me, because we would get into these conversations about perception and light. And so that's kind of it.
Well, really, before we get to you, because my second question was that developing art is a progression. It's, you know, based on, you know, previous bodies of work and also a series of, I think, epiphanies that
yes,
lead to
exactly,
it.
Yes, exactly, yeah.
And so basically that's where you came. So before you started doing this, there was just, what were your bodies of work before this?
Well, there were a couple of epiphanies along the way.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it was originally, it was painting on the front of the canvas,
mm-hmm.
rectangles in a field of black or red, white diamonds sitting on the bottom of the canvas in the center, with various proportions of rectangular canvases that had black or red field. So there was always a diamond, a white diamond that was in the center of the canvas.
So like your drawings right now?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So kind of, although those are... But so I painted those for many, many years. They were always red and white. They were red rectangular canvases with white diamonds, various proportions of the diamond to the field of the canvas.
That's nice.
So it was just that for about 5 years. It was just, you know, I was kind of obsessed with red and white, and sometimes black field.
Mm-hmm.
Then one day I had a square canvas, a little square canvas, and it was hanging on the wall, and I just decided to paint the side of it red, and it was, I think that's what happened. And that was the first epiphany.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't go further with that until later, when I was looking at the canvas, the diamond on the canvas, and I made it into a rectangle instead of a diamond.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first epiphany. Like, I don't have to keep doing this symmetrical thing.
Right.
So I started moving it up the canvas, and it became a rectangle. And then the epiphany was, why am I, or whatever, it was a question,
mm-hmm.
why am I painting this on the front of a canvas? Why don't I just take the rectangle and put it on the wall? So that's making, wow, that'll just make the canvas, the canvas is now the actual painting
yeah.
on the wall,
yeah.
but it doesn't require a painting on it. It's now, it is the painting.
Mm-hmm.
I love that you, I mean, to me, when I first saw them at Nancy's house years ago,
the red
and white one,
it was
like, I almost laughed, because it was like, oh my God, she's taken the canvas and made it an object. And you're
right.
Like, you're almost like, I can take a table and make a painting out
exactly.
of it. You know?
I could do anything.
Yeah. It's,
and it was also,
I thought it was brilliant. Yeah.
Thank you. It's also realizing you can do anything.
Yeah.
Like, and that was just so
not?
Freeing.
Yeah.
I could, you know, I was like, at first, why would I do that? And then it was like, why shouldn't I do that? And it became really exciting, because I could play around with the wall.
Mm.
The canvas became the paint, and it was just white, so I didn't have to. And it was interesting that Peter Frank came to one of the shows at Bergamot. Remember that show where the paintings
oh, yeah,
were
yeah,
going
yeah.
up the wall
yeah, yeah,
at
yeah.
a 45-degree angle, these huge 9-foot canvases going up the wall. And Peter Frank came in and said, this is a New York problem with a California solution.
Right.
Oh, nice.
Oh, that's funny.
That's great.
So it's that edge, you know, kind
yeah.
of, anyway, so that's, and then that's what happened. They just slowly became, you know, painted on the sides and more refined
mm-hmm.
as an object on the wall and glowing and light and working in space, because the color kind of does create a space around.
Oh, 100%. And also, and
not
how
just the wall.
Just, yeah, it basically, it engages the space, because it's all where you're standing.
Well, and this is where Brian's in mind. This
yes.
is where we,
mm-hmm.
you know, this is the perception, right?
Right.
And we could probably talk more about that, because perception is really...
I think we have a question coming about that.
Okay.
So let's get to Brian really quick. And so again, the same question to you. And I guess let's combine the second question I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Of, you know, how much were you influenced by the California Light and Space movement, and then going into, what were the epiphanies that led to your body of work?
Right.
And influences.
Yeah. The jumping off point for me is sort of this interactive nature to the work and sort of the problem-solving elements to the way in which I end up constructing things, where I want people to be engaged, I want them to move around the work, I want it to perceptually change. And so those concepts are really what Irwin and Dwayne Valentine and Peter Alexander and Helen Pashkin and whatnot developed at a time where that work wasn't seemingly important or relevant. And they were doing it in Southern California, where it's about light, it's about, you know, material. And so it's almost as if, like, my idea of what I wanted to do was already there, and I kind of happened upon it. So when I moved to Los Angeles in 96, I was familiar with Irwin's work and Terrell, and they were sort of driving forces in the way I thought about the work. And then I was here, and I got to meet a lot of them, and so it's, I don't even know where that kind of idea began, that relationship began, but it, I guess it's always kind of been there. And again, I think it's there's a lot about process that is similar to their work and what I do.
Did you ever paint?
Yeah. Okay. And this work, the current show doesn't. Some of them are painted. I mean, I did a little exercise where I'd made paintings for a while that were sort of abstract in nature, very gestural but linear. And one day I was like, how do you take the paintbrush out of the painting, right? You know. So to me, it was material. And these guys, whether it be resin, urethane, whatever, they were using materials in a different way to create an experience. And I wanted to put my own little take on that. And so the idea of creating something linear, like, what do? You find an object, like I actually started with dental floss. And yeah. I just pulled it, you know, I was like, okay, that's how you make a straight line. And then wire, and then, you know, you test things. It was problem solving. I was like, oh, okay, wait, this thread works. And it ended up, there was an alchemy to it, but I ended up trying different things to kind of create that experience. And
I've been to your studio, and it seems like, you know, you have a very specific thread that you use.
Yes.
How did you
find
that thread?
Well, it's, yeah, that's just, you know, shopping, right? You know, you just...
Materials.
Yeah, materials. You go, I buy thread from this place in South Carolina and a place in France. It's a little stronger. It has different palettes. Yeah, you know. And then sometimes I'll have colors specifically made if I can't find the color that I'm looking for. But again, like, thread's very incidental. I mean, it's hard to look at these paintings and not think of them as like, oh, that's the thread. It's, to me, it could be anything. It happens to be thread in this body of work, but like,
you refer to them really, as paintings though.
Absolutely, yeah. Because I mean, it's what is a painting? I mean, a painting is something that you create, right? Using a material. Like, it can use paint, or it can use a pencil, or it can use charcoal, or it can use thread, or it can use, you know, words. I mean, to me, I think that, and I don't mind calling them sculptures at the same time, because I like the way that those concepts are kind of bridged by this particular series of, I know this is on the radio, so you can't hear what I'm, but I'm pointing to a box frame that's wrapped in thread. Does that answer? Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and with both of you, when I was doing your studio visits, something that's struck me is you both describe your work and how viewing your work in the same way. And it's a lot about kind of radiation and movement. Mm-hmm. And you both asked me to move around the studio. And so when you're creating the work, how much are you thinking about where the viewer is going to be, or are you just kind of assuming the viewer is always going to be moving?
I think about it a lot. I mean, I think you and I were talking about this last night, is I want there to be an entryway into the experience, but I don't want it to be super obvious. And or it's okay if it is, but I don't. That's not the point of it. So, mm-hmm. You know, the fact that you might happen upon a saturation or a vibration or a radiation that happens both in both of our works, mm-hmm. I think,
yeah.
is kind of the aha moment or part of the experience. Because to me, the workload of abstract art is to engage the viewer into something that's not specifically representational. So if you can draw someone in without hitting them over the head,
yeah.
mm-hmm. you know, that seems to me to be kind of the nuance that Deb does so well with the glow, the subtle glow when I see her work. Like, you glance at it, and then 10 minutes later, the sun's gone down a little bit more, mm-hmm. and the glow's changed. Or you're standing over there, and the glow's changed, or the color's intensified. Like, all of those subtleties are, they're not hitting you over the head, but they're like, you're experiencing the work. The work feels different an hour after you see it, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm.
And that's, true of yours, too.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I want to live with, right? When I have a painting on the wall, I want to walk by it and have an experience in the morning that's very different from the
and
experience I
totally
have at night.
And that's totally space and light. Yeah. I mean, that's because of the light in the room, the light in the, like, if we turn the lights off on the ceiling, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. my paintings glow even more. Somehow the daylight, the ambient light brings it out more. When the light comes on, then there's a whole other reaction, you know, kind of alchemical.
Oh, 100. Thing. When I've actually taken to, when people come into the gallery, it's turning off the lights.
Exactly.
And having that change. And what strikes me with both of your work, a friend of mine once described this moment when you're eating a burrito and you get the treasure bite. It's like when everything comes together at once, you're like, oh my God, that was perfect.
Yeah.
And I think you guys both have this kind of viewing thing that happens. It's like you hit that treasure bite where you're just like, oh my gosh, this is perfect.
Yeah.
I'll bring a painting home and put it up in our apartment to kind of live with it and see. And this is when I have two kids, and my son was like two, and he started crying or something in the middle of the night. And I put a painting up in the hallway that has no natural light. And, you know, it's like 3 a.m. I jump out of bed, I go in the hallway, I turn on the light, and this purple painting was on the wall. And I was like, what?
How did that become purple?
Well, yeah, it was never purple. It was this navy blue enamel that I'd put this lavender thread on, whatever. And I was like, what? I mean, it was so startling and so awesome.
Isn't
on
that
some
fantastic?
Levels. Like, I was like, wait a second. I didn't know. How did that happen?
Isn't that
and
secret?
It was, it reminded me of how, well, the most obvious thing is, you know, how light plays into not only the thread, but the paint, but the experience of the gradations during the day that happen in the studio. I don't see. I'm not at my studio at night.
Not to mention the awe that we can feel for with our own work. How cool is that? We actually fall in love with our art.
Well, that's nice.
Right?
I didn't think of it that way.
Being in love, like, just whoa! How did that happen? I'm so curious about perception. It's my favorite. I think about it all the time, right? Like you probably do too. Perception and what, and
absolutely.
It's like. Because it's the place before your thinking.
Right.
It's perception is actually the sentient feeling.
Yeah.
and then before you're making a concept about it. Like when you were saying before, it's not a picture of something, it's not about anything. That's where we want to be. So that's why I think, you know, it's so cool, you know, space and light painting, because it involves perception, and it's, you know, it just does not really involve the mind, the thinking.
The consciousness. I mean, I like the way you said that, is because it is the, you know, the technical aspects of the way the work is constructed, right? We're using color, light, or color, depth, texture, motion. Those are all things that happen in the visual cortex before our brain sort of cognates thing, right?
Exactly.
So it's that moment before.
And it becomes less, and it suddenly, it's less material.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a truth,
right?
That's a truth of things as they are. Well, I'm now getting a little... But that's kind of, you know, how things are. There's no real materiality when you get down to it. So there we have it. It's like, you know, that's what we're doing.
Now, when you guys are creating your work, I mean, obviously I've been to both your studios, but you have, there's a lot of really large pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the smallest piece we have is what, the diamond, the 18?
2-foot diamond.
Yeah, so.
And, 18, yeah.
Yeah, so how often, I mean, you tend to, like, I know you go small and large.
In terms of size,
How often, where's your sweet spot? Where do you think it's like the kind of dimension hits, where, you know?
The bigger the better for me, because I'm, the more of your periphery that I can take in with the work, the more successful it is.
Yeah.
So a lot of times when I make smaller work, I'll make it in multiples so that they exist as an object. As a small piece, but they're in conversation with.
We were just talking about the piece you did, which was 100.
Yeah, it was 100 little six by of that series. Yeah.
Yeah, he's pointing to a bookshelf.
100 what?
That little painting, I guess Carolyn bought it from a show I did in 2008.
Oh, I remember that.
And I hadn't seen it, and I forgot about that series. But Heather and I were talking beforehand. I made 100 of those. In a 10x10 grid that was, it's one painting actually, but it was broken up, so that's number 15, I think.
Wow.
But it exists, yeah, exactly. It exists as one piece, and, you know, it went out in the world and fragmented, but yeah.
went out in the world.
To answer your question, I love making really wide sort of horizontal work that you can stand in front of, the viewer can stand in front of, and they're sort of encompassed by the entire piece. Because that sort of visual periphery, that if the painting can take in everything that you're seeing, it's more successful. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, you know, the wall or whatever.
Oh, that makes sense. And what about you, Deb?
It's funny, your horizontal legs go way up.
Yeah.
So I think my tallest is 10 foot of a, you know, 6 inches by 10 feet. And I love doing those because it's like, to me, it's like, I don't like to be too referential, but it's kind of like looking up at a building or looking up at a tree. It's kind of...
And where you have to snap your head up.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just kind of, whoa, you know, that awe feeling.
Yeah.
And when they glow, and I sometimes think that, I mean, I want to do a series of different forms of different kinds of greens, almost like a forest of trees, you know, so they're glowing and tall and...
Oh, that'd be gorgeous.
Yeah. So different kinds. So anyway, that's just, but I just like the monument feeling. And they sit on the floor, the paintings. I hadn't mentioned that.
Yes.
The paintings sit on the floor.
Yes, we've had discussions about that.
Yes. I mean, they don't have to.
Well, because the
floorboards.
Yeah, we have floorboards at the gallery that we weren't able to
that are like 100 years old.
Yeah,
exactly. And Nancy was like, get those out of there. No.
Yeah, there was like, I think, a small petition going on to remove the floorboards for your show.
Not enough people signed.
Yeah, exactly, Nancy.
But yeah, so that's true, yeah. And they and the well, the little ones don't. And yeah. actually, these are 5.5 feet, and that's five. That's exactly what my height is. And I was actually thinking when I get back to the studio, I want to experiment with them sitting on the floor because it's my height.
Oh.
And then I thought, well, you can't do that. You can't have something just sitting on the floor and going that high.
Right.
Like, and I remember in the show at Nye and Brown, Lexi was, I had the 7-footers on the floor, and Lexi was like, the ceilings are so high, maybe we should lift them. I'm like, no, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Of course, I did it in this show, but,
but
you know, I've softened. Yeah. But now I'm thinking, well, actually, no, I may have to go back on the floor after this, but those, I'm thinking, why can't you? Why can't you have a painting tip? Why does it have to be all the way up? You know what I mean? Why can't it be at my height where I'm just...
Yeah.
You know, we question these things, you know?
Well, yeah, that's this... That's
I mean, it
just
looks
like
dwarfed.
You're using a canvas as like, you're
as
making...
A,
yeah, as the object. You can...
Why can't it be?
Yeah,
Why does it have to be up and, you know... And I mean, you know, and it can be uncomfortable. I could see that.
For sure.
A painting 5.5 feet high on the floor could be extremely uncomfortable.
Which is...
Part of the,
awesome.
Yeah,
I mean,
I think.
But
great.
Why is it? We're not. Are we uncomfortable to each other if we're standing on the floor?
Right.
But I think I think discomfort when you're viewing a piece of work is not bad. I think
right.
It's like, well, it keeps you on your head.
As long as there's something also going on. I mean, there is that glow that's happening at the top, so you're kind of eye to eye with the glow there.
Yeah.
Of color, so, you know.
Well, and it's the same thing with your work. It's, you know, when... You know, we have a couple of pieces that are stacked.
Right.
And then the top and bottom come into play a lot more than when it's hung at, you know, with the 60 inches.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which
It's, and they become objects, right? I mean, they
yes.
You know, if you're going to be able to view the top and the bottom and it's part of the work as opposed to being on the surface, then, you know, it becomes more of an object to me.
The other thing I think about your work often is that it's a box. It's, you know, it's not a beveled thing where it's, you know, it's not precious.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't make it precious
by,
because I was thinking, you know, you could just have only the thread,
right.
You know, and then the bevel, so the only the thread shows, or, you know,
right,
I mean,
right.
That might be, but it's a box.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. It's, so it has a kind of you know, a solidity to it that's object-like, and I like that combination of the ethereal and the and a wooden box.
Well, so we've talked so much about how you guys got to where you are. Where do you see it going from here now?
Well,
bigger, taller.
Well, the trees, a forest of. No, but also my main thing now is like playing around with paintings hanging really close to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I necessarily have to sell them that way, just to make clear. But I really enjoy, I'm very new at it, you know, just hanging them close together so that the colors mingle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting.
On the wall and in the air between.
Almost like
the green and teal.
The dual palette you're doing there, with the yellow and the pink.
Exactly. But then the blue and the green in the show.
Yeah, that's nice.
It's, you know, even closer, but where they mingle, they become I call it teal, but it's one is blue, one is green. So I'd like to do a whole series along, you know, filling up a whole wall where they're, you know, different colors or just...
That'd
going
be great.
Crazy and
And Brian?
I'm going back to the concept of object. I'm very, the work seems to, well, one of the nice things that have happened is that the works are kind of defined by process. So, like, when I make something, I'm constantly writing notes down and sort of discovering things. So a lot of times where the work goes is defined by the making of the previous work. So the detritus from one object or one painting or one series of work becomes the material for the next. And you've been in my studio, bags of like floss and tape and blah everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But conceptually, I'm working on a series of work that are floor sculptures, they're furniture, And sort of incorporating the technique of some of this work that's a little bit more traditional, maybe painting on a wall or sculpture on a wall, to objects that we live with. So they're going to be chairs, they're going to be tables, they're going to be weird things that are on the floor that we're not sure what we're looking at. And still very sort of material-centric, meaning that when we look at it, the questions that might come up are not only what am I looking at, but how is it made, what is it made of? And I think that that's sort of a conscious thing that I concentrate on, because I think it's engaging. I think that when someone walks by something and they have to ask questions about it, there's an inherent relationship that takes place, or inherent engagement that says, like, oh, wait, what am I looking at? How is that made? Like, what am I looking at? And that if I can get you there, then the conversation begins. And so that's sort of where my head's at in terms of, like, creating work in general. Whether, I mean, most bodies of work that I'll work on that I think about or kind of start there.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. So the final question, and this is coming from Lisa, how much do you love exhibiting in Ojai?
Me too. It's thrilling for me because I lived here.
Yeah.
And there was not really an art scene here. There was not, I mean, I was painting here and, you know, my work was very different then, but it was just, you know, there was nothing here really at all. Mm. Except one gallery that came and went real fast. But it's thrilling because I have, you know, I tell everybody down there, now people want to come up and see the show and they want to come to Ojai, and they think, like my friend said last night, oh, I thought it was just going to be a little, you know, oh, how nice you're showing up, you know. And he came up and he was like, whoa, this is serious. This is serious.
Oh, dude,
this is a
Porch
real...
Porch galleries all the rave in L.A.
Porch galleries all the rave in L.A. And all the artists that we know are coming up here and showing.
Why wouldn't
it's
you?
Amazing.
I mean, talking about light and space, seriously, it's...
Yeah, talk about,
like,
light and space.
Light and space. There's no more beautiful place on Earth than... April and Ojai. And by the way, light, space, and smell.
Smell.
Yeah. The orange blossoms are amazing right now. But I think Ojai
mingles with the jasmine.
Yeah, exactly. Ojai has a tradition of artists. I mean, the blacklisted writers kind of, you know, were here. Dalton Trumbo, etc.
That's right.
The
Renegades.
The Renegades. And at the same time, Ojai, I think, it is a burgeoning place for L.A., people that want to get out of L.A., and what happens, for, like, any good neighborhood, what's the first thing? The artists move in,
That's it.
Then there's a cool gallery that comes.
That's
and I think
it.
That what Lisa and Heather have done
well,
is,
good.
And I think you'll see in 10 years, there's going to be 5 good galleries here. And
well,
there's,
and the foundation.
And the foundation, of course,
yeah.
Exactly. And I think it's nice to be a part of something that's at the beginning, if you will,
so
you know.
Great.
Yeah. And by the way, Carolyn, who was such an amazing champion of a lot of LA artists, she not only myself but Rye, Rob, a lot of people, she helped us turn into mature as artists and taught us a lot. And so the fact that this foundation is here makes it extra special and draws a lot of us up here. I mean, the inaugural show was a kind of a testament to how much she was loved. It is loved, I should say.
What was the inaugural
show? Oh, it was the foundation show we did last April?
Yeah.
Artists that Carolyn Glasso Bailey had worked with.
Oh, okay.
And that was the launch of the foundation.
And who is Carolyn, to explain who she is?
Oh, that was Lila's sister. She passed
Oh, okay.
a year ago in November.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, November of 2016.
I see.
And so that's the foundation where we're sitting right now, and the artists that we see on the walls all worked with Carolyn.
Oh, great.
Yes. So, great. Well, I want to say thank you to you guys. It's...
thanks to you.
Yeah, and...
thank you.
If anyone's... I have to say, the show is... It's hard to document it because it just, you have to be in the space. But it's a gorgeous show. I'm just really happy how your work works together, and you both are incredibly talented, and it's a pleasure to work with you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.